The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back. So today we're diving into Carl Jung. Now, when you hear that name, maybe you think, okay, dream analysis, complex symbols, maybe even something a bit, mystical, almost feels out of place sometimes in our very data-driven world.
That's a common take, definitely. And it's sort of the main hurdle that Anthony Stevens tackles in his work on Jung. This deep dive is really built on Stevens' synthesis. He gives us what feels like a much clearer, even scientifically grounded map of the soul, if you like.
A map of the soul, I like that.
Stevens kind of rescues Jung from just being seen as purely symbolic or spiritual. He argues Jung's core ideas actually have roots in evolutionary biology.
Okay, so our mission today is to unpack that. We want to unlock concepts like the collective unconscious, archetypes, individuation, but see them through this evolutionary lens Stevens provides. But hang on, when you say scientifically grounded, what's the actual bridge there? How does Stevens make Jung palatable to, say, modern science?
Yeah, that's the crucial question. Stevens' authority here comes from a really unique mix. He's not just a Jungian analyst, though he is qualified. He's also a distinguished British psychiatrist. And importantly, he has real expertise in evolutionary psychiatry and ethology.
Ethology. So like the study of animal behavior. Jane Goodall stuff, but for the human psyche.
Kind of, yeah. He's right. Looking at innate behavior patterns in animals, why geese imprint, how primates sort out hierarchies, that kind of thing. And he sees powerful parallels in how the human psyche is structured.
Ah, okay.
So his perspective is that Jung's big ideas, like archetypes, aren't mystical whispers from nowhere. They are, in his view, inherited mental structures. Think of them as psychic organs that evolved because they helped us survive and navigate life.
Psychic organs. That's a strong term. So like our kidneys filter blood, these psychic organs filter or structure our experience of what? Love? Death? Conflict?
Precisely. They're evolved systems for processing these universal human challenges. Mm-hmm. Birth, finding a mate, dealing with enemies, facing death, needing community, searching for meaning. These archetypes are like the pre-installed software, the potential for certain patterns of feeling and behaving that all humans share because it worked for our ancestors.
Right. That reframes it completely. It's not just a vague idea. It's potentially an inherited program.
Mm-hmm. Developed over vast stretches of time.
Now, you can't really understand Jung or maybe Stevens' take on him without talking about the big split with Freud, can you? It's legendary, that break. More than just disagreement, it feels like a clash of worldviews.
Oh, absolutely fundamental. Freud, as we know, was insistent. It was all about sexuality. The libido as sexual energy. That was the engine driving everything.
And Jung just couldn't accept that narrow focus.
Exactly. He saw libido as much broader as general psychic energy, the energy for life itself. Stevens connects this idea back to evolution too, psychic energy as the resource pool for all adaptive behavior, survival, bonding, creativity, not just sex.
So it wasn't just theoretical, it came from his clinical work too.
Yes, particularly with patients experiencing psychosis. He was seeing these incredibly deep universal symbols and themes emerge that you just couldn't trace back to their personal childhood experiences alone. Freud's model of the personal unconscious, it just wasn't enough to explain it. It pointed to something deeper, something shared.
So boiling it down, the core thesis in Stevens' interpretation is that Jung's analytical psychology isn't just about fixing problems like neurosis. It's aiming for something bigger.
Definitely. It's a holistic approach. It acknowledges the spiritual dimension, you could say, without necessarily being religious in a conventional sense. The goal is achieving wholeness, self-realization, by integrating all the parts of ourselves, conscious and unconscious.
Okay, let's try to map this inner world Jung described. It's often pictured like an ocean, right? Layers.
That's a good analogy. So on the surface, you've got the ego. That's the center of our consciousness, our sense of I, the little islands we know.
Right. And just below the surface.
That's the personal unconscious. This is closer to Freud's idea. It holds our forgotten memories, repressed feelings, and also what Jung called complexes, those emotionally charged clusters of ideas, maybe around power or inferiority or our mother.
Okay. Complexes. Got it. But the real game changer, the deep ocean itself, is the collective unconscious.
This is Jung's most radical and, I think, important contribution. It's the deepest layer, absolutely universal. Stevens calls it a psychic blueprint. It contains the inherited psychological potential of all humankind, accumulated over our entire evolutionary history.
Wow. So that's why myths from completely different cultures can have such similar themes and characters. They're tapping into the same shared blueprint.
That's the idea. It's the bedrock of shared human experience.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the psyche tries to balance itself, like a self-regulating system.
Yes, that's crucial. It's called the compensatory function. The psyche naturally seeks equilibrium. So if our conscious ego gets too one-sided, maybe too rational, ignoring feelings, or too focused on success, ignoring relationships, the unconscious will try to correct the imbalance.
How does it do that?
Often through things we find unpleasant. Symptoms like anxiety or depression, really vivid, maybe disturbing dreams, sometimes even a full-blown life crisis. These aren't just random problems. Jung saw them as messages. The psyche is essentially saying, hey, pay attention. Something important is being neglected here.
That reframes suffering, doesn't it? It's not just meaningless pain. It's potentially meaningful communication.
Exactly. It's the psyche trying to get our attention to restore balance, to force us towards greater wholeness.
Okay, so that's the structure. Now, what about the inhabitants, the archetypes? You said they're like organizing principles, not specific images.
Right. Think of them not as fixed images, but as innate tendencies or predispositions to experience and respond to the world in typically human ways. Like instincts, but on a psychological level. They shape how we perceive things like mother, hero, death. The specific image comes from our culture and personal life, but the underlying pattern, the archetype, is universal.
Okay. So which ones are most relevant for, like, everyday self-awareness? Where should someone start?
Well, two jump out immediately.
Yes.
First, the persona. That's the social mask or masks we wear. You know, the professional self, the family self, the out with friends self.
Necessary for society, right? You can't just be totally unfiltered all the time.
Exactly. It's necessary. Yeah. But the danger comes when we identify with the mask too much. When we mistake our persona for our actual deeper self, we lose touch with who we really are underneath.
Okay. And the second one, I'm guessing, the shadow.
Yep. The shadow. This is the dark side, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the parts of ourselves that we repress or disown because they don't fit our self-image or societal expectations. Things like greed, anger, laziness, envy, but also potentially positive things we're afraid of, like ambition or power.
Ah, so the stuff we project onto other people when someone really annoys us.
Often, yes. Jung would say that intense irritation might be pointing to something in your own shadow that you haven't acknowledged. Now, the goal isn't to eliminate the shadow you can't. It's about integration.
But wait, if you integrate your dark side, doesn't that just mean you become, I don't know, more aware of being selfish or aggressive? How does that lead to growth?
That's the crucial point Stevens makes, drawing on Jung. Integration isn't about acting out the shadow impulsively. It's about acknowledging those energies exist within you.
Mm-hmm.
If you deny your capacity for aggression, for example, it doesn't vanish. It might leak out sideways as passive aggression, or you might unconsciously provoke it in others.
Ah.
Integrating it means consciously recognizing, okay, I do have this capacity for aggression or selfishness. Then you can choose how and when or if to express that energy constructively. Maybe that aggression becomes healthy assertiveness. Maybe owning your laziness helps you actually set boundaries and rest properly. It's about reclaiming the energy tied up in the shadow, which is often a source of vitality.
That makes sense. It's about owning the potential, not necessarily unleashing it destructively. Okay, moving on. Relationships. The anima and animus.
Right. The anima is the unconscious feminine aspect within a man's psyche. And the animus is the unconscious masculine aspect within a woman's psyche. These are internal figures shaped by personal experiences, but also by collective images of femininity and masculinity.
And this is where projection gets really interesting in romance.
Hugely interesting. Stevens, with his evolutionary lens, points out how we often project our anima or animus onto a potential partner. We fall in love with the image inside us, superimposed onto the real person.
That initial magic feeling.
Exactly. That intense idealization can feel wonderful, and evolutionarily, maybe it helped forge strong pair bonds needed for raising offspring. But inevitably, the real person can't live up to the projected perfection of the archetype.
Cue the disillusionment.
Right, the they're not who I thought they were moment. Jung would say this isn't necessarily a disaster. It's an invitation to withdraw the projection, to differentiate the inner image from the outer person, and to develop a more realistic relationship with both. And importantly, to find those feminine or masculine qualities within yourself.
So the journey is always back inwards, which leads us to the central archetype, The self.
Yes, the self, with a capital S. This is the ultimate goal, the regulating center of the entire psyche, encompassing both conscious and unconscious. Mm-hmm. It represents wholeness, integration, the totality of who you are and who you could be. It's often symbolized in dreams or art by circles, mandalas, unifying symbols.
Okay, so if the self is the destination representing wholeness, how do we actually get there? What's the journey Stevens describes? This process Jung called individuation.
Individuation is that lifelong journey of becoming who you truly are. It's about differentiating yourself from the collective, integrating all those disparate parts, persona, shadow, anim, animus, and realizing your unique potential.
Lifelong. So it's not a quick fix.
Definitely not. And Stevens highlights something Jung observed. This process often really kicks into high gear in the second half of life.
Ah, the famous midlife crisis territory.
You could see it that way, but maybe more constructively. In the first half of life, the focus is typically outward. Building a career, establishing a family, finding your place in the world, developing the ego, essentially.
Makes sense. Survival, fitting in.
But then, often around midlife, those external achievements can start to feel hollow, like something's missing. That's often the psyche signaling a shift. The focus needs to turn inward towards deeper questions of meaning, purpose, legacy, and confronting the parts of yourself you ignored while building the external structure.
So it's a necessary, if sometimes uncomfortable, pivot.
A very necessary pivot for true growth, according to Jung.
And briefly, Jung also gave us psychological types, the basis for things like the Myers-Briggs type indicator, MBTI, right? We don't need to detail every type, but what's the key takeaway from that model?
The big takeaway is understanding that people are genuinely wired differently in how they perceive the world and make decisions. You've got the basic attitudes, introversion, drawing energy from the inner world, versus extroversion, drawing energy from the outer world.
Okay.
And then the four functions in opposing pairs. Thinking, logical analysis, versus feeling, value-based judgment, and sensation, focusing on concrete reality via the senses, versus intuition, focusing on possibilities, patterns, the big picture.
So the practical application is?
It's huge for communication and understanding difference. If you know you lead with thinking and your partner leads with feeling, you can understand why you might clash on decisions. You're prioritizing logic, they're prioritizing values or impact on people. Neither is wrong, just different. It helps you appreciate diverse perspectives and maybe choose work or roles that really play to your natural cognitive strengths.
Okay, that's super useful. So bringing this all together, why should someone listening right now really care about these Jungian ideas, especially through Stevens' lens? What are the core messages?
I think one key theme Stevens emphasizes is the integration of opposites. Our culture often pushes us towards being just one thing, always positive, always strong, always rational. Jung says no. Psychological health comes from holding the tension between opposites, conscious and unconscious, light and dark, masculine and feminine within.
So embracing complexity, not striving for some impossible simplicity.
Exactly. That tension is where creativity and growth happen. Another major theme is the search for meaning. Jungian psychology directly addresses that fundamental human need for purpose and connection, something often missing in purely behavioral or medical models of the mind. It acknowledges that spiritual hunger in a broad sense.
It gives depth back to psychology. Now, Stevens pulls out some really memorable quotes or ideas from Jung. Which ones stand out as particularly relevant?
Oh, there's so many powerful ones. But maybe start with the core motivation. The privilege of a lifetime is to become who you truly are. That really captures the essence of individuation. It's not just navel-gazing. It's presented almost as a duty to realize your unique potential.
I like that. And there's a stark warning, too, isn't there?
Yes, the one about the unconscious. Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. Oof. That's a call to action, right? It puts the responsibility squarely on us to understand our own patterns. Otherwise, we just feel like victims of circumstance.
It really makes you rethink things you thought were just bad luck and for dealing with others.
There's that incredibly practical insight. Everything that irritates us about others can lead us to an understanding of ourselves. It turns annoyance into a tool for self-discovery. That flash of anger or judgment towards someone else, it might be reflecting your own unacknowledged shadow back at you.
Okay, so let's make this really concrete. How could someone listening apply these ideas, say, starting tomorrow?
Well, three areas come to mind. First, relationships. Start noticing projection. When you idealize a partner or when you get intensely disappointed, ask, am I seeing them or am I seeing my own anima animus? Try to consciously separate the archetype from the actual person.
That could save a lot of heartache. What else?
Second, self-acceptance through shadow work. Pay attention to who or what triggers strong negative reactions in you. Instead of just blaming them, ask, what aspect of myself might this be showing me? Acknowledging those disowned parts, even the uncomfortable ones, is key to feeling more whole and authentic.
Okay, and a third?
Tap into your creativity and problem solving. Treat your dreams seriously as messages from the unconscious. Try techniques like active imagination, consciously engaging with dream figures, or inner feelings in a waking state. The unconscious isn't just a bin for repressed stuff. It's a source of wisdom and novel solutions.
So really, the big picture here, the value Stevens brings, is rescuing Jung from the woo-woo corner and showing him as a kind of natural scientist of the psyche.
I think that's fair, yes. He makes a strong case that Jung's core ideas are compatible with an evolutionary scientific worldview. They describe fundamental aspects of the evolved human mind.
And the biggest takeaway for personal growth.
For me, it's the idea of integration and developing a collaborative relationship with your own psychological difficulties. Stop fighting your symptoms or your dark side as enemies. Reframe them. See suffering, dreams, crises, not as failures, but as communication from your deeper self, trying to guide you toward balance and wholeness.
That's a really powerful and ultimately hopeful way to look at our inner lives. It changes everything. And as a final thought to leave everyone with, Jung had this observation, didn't he, about what happens when societies lose conscious touch with these deep archetypal forces, maybe through the decline of myths, rituals, shared stories.
Yeah, he warned that the archetypes don't just disappear when we ignore them or pretend they're not real. They lose connection to conscious understanding and can then manifest in really destructive ways, either individually as neurosis, or collectively, as mass movements, ideologies, even collective psychosis, driven by unconscious, unintegrated archetypal energies.
So a challenging question for all of us to ponder might be, where do we see that happening today? What current collective trends, social movements, political dynamics might be expressions of powerful archetypes running wild, unacknowledged, and unintegrated on the world stage?
Definitely something worth thinking about.
We'll leave you with that thought. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into Carl Jung and the evolutionary psyche, guided by the work of Anthony Stevens.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.